It's showtime.
Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go. We are one day away from being through with the first full week of February Broadcasting 2019. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. And also there you will find the tab that says chat room. And if you'll click on it and pick yourself out a screen name and a password and jump in, you'll be greeted at this point in time early in the program by early arrivers Anatole and Squeaky. And capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, although he is a spacing guild master, has chosen not to fold space and remains Sparky this Northern California afternoon. You'll also be moderated by pinch hit midweek utility chat room moderator and all around great guy, Steve from Georgistan, meaning that we've got, at this point in time, one moderator for every member of the chat room. How's that for personal service? Yes. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid, and it's a Thursday evening. It's a thorn in the side Thursday. It's a naked radio Thursday, because here in the fantastic, fabulous Horn Studios at the magnificent Kincaid Mansion, we've got almost 77 degrees. With temperatures probably even warmer outside. Slightly cooler. But, yeah, we got up to 70 degrees here in the first week, the end of the first week of February. Uh-huh. Yeah. I was checking the temperature from my old hometown earlier, and, well, I think they were 1 degree away from being 80 degrees today. And 80 degrees in February does not bode well for that neck of the woods. It usually means tornado season is going to come early. And, of course, tornado season only comes early because we have somehow managed, no, not somehow, we know exactly how, managed to fuck up the climate. Because climate change is real. It's real for you. It's real for me. It's real for people in the Maldives whose islands are rapidly submerging beneath the waves of rising sea levels. The only people for whom climate change is not real is apparently Republicans and maggots. Yeah. Why waste a perfectly good day of potential naked radio, I always say. And once again, the entire Horn community family congregation gives thanks to various and sundry deities, non-deities, flying spaghetti monsters, and whatnot, that this program exists only in audio form. Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, hey, there's Hung Like Jesus wandering by the chat room. Hey, Hung Like Jesus, how you doing, brother? The first thing we do at the beginning of every program is to extend thanks to the people who are a big part, at least 25% of why this program remains on the air. I'm speaking, of course, of our subscribers. And so today, thanks go out to Reed. Thank you, Reed. Thanks as well to Dr. Allen for being a partial sponsor of the program, Dr. Allen down in Texas. And that's it. I did have one late arrival yesterday, so thanks very kindly to our buddy Bob at Bomasa. That means, and again, if you don't, please let me know. If you are a subscriber and you don't hear me read your name, let me know so I could go back and double check, because notifications from PayPal are a hot mess. It was working very, very nicely for a very long time until they decided it was working too well and sent some enterprising code writers out to screw up everything that was making it work, you know, so well. And so fundraising-wise, the first full week of February has been a brute, an absolute brute. We have the fundraising goal this evening is, $695. That means that over the course of this week, we've raised a grand total of $105 in the effort to keep this program on the air. And this is not the Oral Roberts speech. I will never give the Oral Roberts speech, but the fact of the matter is, that ain't no way to keep a radio program on the air. So that's where we are. We got $695 to raise. May as well go ahead and say what it is as of tomorrow evening, and that is $895, because, or $890, $895. And that's about as grim as it's gotten. But I'm not going to be some I'm not going to be a nattering nabob of negativity about it. We'll just figure out that we'll keep this thing going as long as we can, and if the lights go out, the lights go out. If the internet goes off, the internet goes off. And by the way, the internet will go off, and it'll go off sometime next week under present circumstances. Steve in New York asking, did Microsoft purchase PayPal? That would make sense because if PayPal was that screwed up a mess, but yeah. Well, how about that? It is high summer down under in Sydney, Australia. Robert in Australia lets us know that Sydney, 10 a.m., because that's what it is there right now, 10 a.m., Sydney, Australia, is 80 degrees Fahrenheit and 66% humidity. If you don't think the climate of this planet is 16 shades of fucked up, consider the fact that the difference between morning in high summer and late evening in the dead of goddamn winter between Sydney, Australia, and Appalachia, the temperature difference is about, at best, 12 degrees. Right. Yeah. But, what's this? Thank you very kindly to John for getting us started this evening. That takes us down to $685. Thank you, John. And there's a $10 challenge on the table, courtesy of Ralphs. I'll kick in $10 if somebody else contributes $10, and then I'll contribute $10 more. So that would take us down to $645, which would be tremendous. Thank you, Ralphs. Thank you so very much for all you do. So there's a $10 challenge on the table that can result in a $40 reduction in the fundraising here at the little independent liberal broadcast outlet that is the Horn. Steve in New York says, my dad said it was 80 degrees in Canton, Georgia today. I'll bet you, and that's not too awfully far from, our buddy Steve from Georgistan, and I'll bet he can testify. Wait a minute, it's not Wednesday. We're not going to do any testifying. No. But isn't that interesting? 12, 14-degree difference between evening in dead of winter Appalachia and late morning high summer in Australia. I don't think that's how this planet is supposed to work. And from the day late and a dollar short department, there's been a new survey published from the Climate Change Communication Programs at Yale and George Mason University. And it shows, and this is a quote from the report, an increase in Republican understanding of the reality of human-caused global warming, worry about the threat, and support for several climate policies over the past 14 months. This stands in odd juxtaposition with what happened with the GOP organizationally after Julius Geiser became president on that nightmare day that will live in infamy, January the 20th, 2017. Anthony Lazarowicz is director of the Yale Program on Climate Change Communication. And he said that social science research showed that the views espoused by political leaders can influence the views of their followers. And he is now citing something that he calls a Trump effect, in which Julius Geiser's assertions that climate change is a Chinese hoax, and the fact that he bailed us out of the Paris Climate Accords. Professor Lazarowicz says it likely had an effect on his fellow Republicans. Mm-hmm. But here's the thing. 70% of both liberal and moderate Republicans... Wait a minute. Now, stop. That's just a cruel joke. There's no such thing as a liberal Republican. They were run out of the party years ago. And the only moderate Republican out there is noted Republican moderate Susan Collins, who, of course, is a moderate in name only and sticks her flinty Maine nose where the sun doesn't shine relative to Donald Trump any time that he says, jump, Susan, jump. But anyway, there's a whopping 7-point jump from 2017 all the way up to 70% of liberal and moderate Republicans. And again, 70% of liberal and moderate Republicans is a number that might be best expressed by the number zero, because there aren't any. But nonetheless, now let's be optimistic about this. Only 32% of Republicans are even remotely worried about climate change. But even the 32% of conservative Republicans, which is basically all the Republicans, represents a 9-point increase from 2017. And that's the highest percentage of white-wing Republicans since Yale and GMU began the polling practice back in 2008. So if we're trying to be little rays of fucking sunshine, then according to Professor Lazarowicz, these results suggest that the Trump effect has worn off and that Republicans, liberal, moderate, and conservative, are re-engaging the issue. Here's the really impressive, hopeful, optimistic part. When they were asked whether or not they'd support a Green New Deal to generate 100% of the nation's electricity from clean, renewable sources within the next 10 years, whether liberal, moderate, or conservative, Republicans said yes. That's surprising. But nonetheless, what do the numbers look like? 81% of all voters taken together support a Green New Deal. Total Dems is at 92%, Independents is at 88%, and total Republicans is at 64%. Liberal Democrats, 93%. Moderate conservative Democrats, 90%. Liberal moderate Republicans at 75%. And yes, conservative Republicans at 80, no, at 57%. Well, you know, you welcome the sinner into the flock, whether they see the light and come to the foot of the cross at daybreak or at midnight. I think that's how we're supposed to look at things. But I don't necessarily know that this is going to translate into anything. Because remember, please, the guy who stands at the gate of the Senate is quite possibly the biggest climate change denier on planet Earth. And his name is Mitch McConnell. And over on the Senate Natural Resources Committee, even the rank, and that's climate change deniers up and up one wall and down the other on the Republican side, and the ranking member of the Natural Resources Committee on the Democratic side is none other than Joe Manchin, who will be a bulwark against doing anything that deals with climate change in the Senate. He will be fast friends and an eager ally of anything that Chinless Mitch McConnell, as I refer to him now, my old Kentucky homie, wants to do relative to stopping any sort of progress we have, a Green New Deal, anything there in the Senate. And there's not a damn thing that would change the Republican mind, such as it is, hive mind, Borg mind. So that's troubling. But meanwhile, out here in the hinterlands, attitudes are apparently changing. But it sort of reminds me, there was, when I read the headline, it reminded me of how Republicans act relative to issues of race now. Because when Republicans are caught doing something racist, they tend to all hoot at one and the same time, but Abraham Lincoln, Republican MAGA. MAGA, Abraham Lincoln, MAGA Lincoln. Democrats is a racist. Democrats founded the Klan. Utterly oblivious to the fact that political parties and political party attitudes have changed over time, and that opposition to the Civil Rights Act and opposition to the Voting Rights Act had both Republicans and Democrats on board. You may recall that the recently dead George H.W. Bush, in his lone term in Congress, used that time to vote against the Civil Rights Act. Hint, he wasn't a Democrat. And so one wonders if, say, 100 years from now, one wonders if Republicans will be looking back and saying, but 2019, we said we kind of thought global climate change was a little bit real, MAGA. Yeah. You'll have that. Hey, thanks very kindly to our buddy Anatole. Anatole just answered Ralph's challenge and upped it by another 10. So that means what that challenge actually meant. We're going to get down to 635 to go this evening in fundraising. Thank you very much, Anatole, and thank you, Ralphs, for the kind challenge. Thank you very much indeed. But there has been some consideration of climate change in the new Congress, especially in the new House. And I'm not going to give up hope entirely. Who knows? Maybe Joe Manchin and Mitch McConnell and the members of the Senate Natural Resources Committee would be. Maybe the parliamentarian would do an end run on them and put it into Environment and Public Works or something like that, so that Joe and Chinless Mitch couldn't stymie it. I mean, I'd like to think the fact that Joe might finally have had enough of Chinless Mitch, considering what happened and was reported back to him in the wake of the recent election. Chinless Mitch told Donald Trump, "We're going to crush Joe Manchin like a grape." Well, Joe Manchin sloughed off his primary challenge. It was no challenge at all. It was just a public relations. It was a PR stunt and a fundraising grift. And then pretty well cruised on past pill-pushing Patty Morrissey. If the Republicans could have nominated somebody besides an opioid hustler, it might have been different. But it wasn't. And so, having heard about what McConnell said, when the Congress got back underway, Joe visited Mitch McConnell and took him a jaw of grape jelly. It made right cheer in the hills and hollers of almost level West by Cole, Trump Jr. stand. See, that was a way of politely telling Mitch to eat shit and bark at the moon. So maybe Joe would be inclined to not necessarily be a complete lickspittle for Chinless Mitch, although I would never bet that way. No. Let's just for the fun of it, because it comes in handy, let's take a look at the membership of Energy and Natural Resources in the Senate. The ranking member is Joe Manchin, because even though he had the seniority to stop him, Bernie wouldn't say, who says climate change is the absolute existential national security crisis of our time, Bernie wouldn't say, "Hey, I'd like to be the ranking member." Nope. Didn't do it. But the Democratic members also include Ron Wyden of Oregon, Maria Cantwell of Washington, Bernie, Debbie Stabenow, Mazie Hirono, Martin Heinrich of New Mexico, Angus King of Maine, and Catherine Cortez Masto of Nevada. I don't know how many of those are in the pockets of big oil, big coal, big frack. A couple of them at least probably are. But the larger problem is the Republicans. Lisa Murkowski of Alaska chairs it, and she will do whatever Chinless Mitch tells her to do. John Barrasso of Wyoming is a complete climate disaster. James Risch of Idaho is another climate nightmare. Mike Lee of Utah orbits his own planet as the little
butterflies inside his skull whisper to him about what a fantastic Solon of constitutional understanding he is. Steve Daines of Montana, no help. Oh, look, there's Cory Gardner of Colorado, who probably won't be a senator after 2020 because Donald Trump. He might actually vote the right way on a piece of climate legislation if it came to him. Bill Cassidy of Louisiana? Bug-eyed freak? No, not gonna. Oh, Jesus, really? Senator Cindy Hyde-Smith, who wants to sit on the front row of a lynching from Mississippi. She sits on energy and natural resources over in the Senate on the Republican side. Jesus Christ. Lamar Alexander, who is quitting in 2020, also sits on energy and natural resources. He's hanging up the plaid shirt and heading for the ranch, but he doesn't like mountaintop removal, but he hates wind power. He despises wind power. He spits on the ground at the mere mention of a wind turbine, but he loves him some nuclear energy. Yes, he does. And then the group is rounded out with Martha McSally from Arizona and John Hoeven from North Dakota. Please, dear little fake baby Jesus, don't let any climate legislation get anywhere near that committee. What some people are saying, some people, well, the fact of the matter is bipartisan or bicameral, not bipartisan, bicameral legislation was introduced today. With a great deal of fanfare, we were introduced to a resolution today in both houses, in the House by Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and in the Senate by Ed Markey of Massachusetts, that is supposed to be a roadmap toward what is being called a Green New Deal. Let's go over that real quick, if you don't mind. It is HRES, and we don't have a number yet. Don't see it. In the House of Representatives, Ms. Ocasio-Cortez submitted the following resolution. There's not even a note yet on what committee it's been referred to. One guesses it will be Natural Resources, as run by Raul Grijalva. Resolution recognizing the duty of the federal government to create a Green New Deal, whereas the October 2018 report entitled Special Report on Global Warming of 1.5 degrees Celsius by the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change and the November 2018 Fourth National Climate Assessment Report found that 1. Human activity is the dominant cause of observed climate change over the past century. 2. A changing climate is causing sea levels to rise and an increase in wildfires, severe storms, droughts, and other extreme weather events that threaten human life, healthy communities, and critical infrastructure. 3. Global warming at or above 2 degrees Celsius beyond pre-industrialized levels will cause A. mass migration from the regions most affected by climate change. B. More than, oh my God, wait a second, that's hundreds, thousands. More than $500 billion in lost annual economic output in the United States alone by the year 2100. C. Wildfires that by 2050 will annually burn at least twice as much forest area in the western United States than was typically burned by wildfires in the years preceding 2019. D. A loss of more than 99% of all coral reefs on Earth. E. More than 350,000 more people to be exposed globally to deadly heat stress by 2050. And F. A risk of damage to... Wait, there it is again. All those goddamn zeros. Hundreds, thousands, millions. Oh, a risk of damage to $1 trillion of public infrastructure and coastal real estate in the United States. And 4. Global temperatures must be kept below 1.5 degrees Celsius above pre-industrialized levels to avoid the most severe impacts of a changing climate, which will require A. global reductions in greenhouse gas emissions from human sources of 40 to 60% from 2010 levels by 2030, and B, net zero emissions by 2050. And then comes a bunch of whereases. Whereas, because the United States has historically been responsible for a disproportionate amount of greenhouse gas emissions, why do they hate America? It's just true. It's not hating America. It's just true. Having emitted 20% of global greenhouse gas emissions through 2014 and has a high technological capacity, the United States must take a leading role in reducing emissions through economic transformation. Whereas the United States is currently experiencing several related crises, with life expectancy declining, while basic needs such as clean air, clean water, healthy food, and adequate health care, housing, transportation, and education are inaccessible to a significant portion of the United States population, a four-decade trend of economic stagnation, deindustrialization, and anti-labor policies that has led to hourly wages overall stagnating since the 1970s, third worst level of socioeconomic mobility in the developed world before the Great Recession, the erosion of the earning and bargaining power of the workers of the United States, inadequate resources for public sector workers to confront the challenges of climate change at local, state, and federal levels, and the greatest income inequality since the 1920s, with the top 1% of earners accruing 91% of gains in the first few years, a large racial wealth divide amounting to a difference of 20 times more wealth between the average white family and the average black family, and C, a gender earnings gap that results in women earning approximately 80% as much as men at the median. And this goes on and on and on and on. With a laundry list, a litany, if you will, of the impacts of climate change and what the country has to do to respond to it. And those are all just the whereases. I'm looking for the now be it resolved. Oh, there it is. It is resolved that it is the sense of the House of Representatives that it is the duty of the federal government to create a Green New Deal. And the elements of the Green New Deal run A through... Wait a minute. A through N for part two. Clean, affordable, accessible public transportation, zero emissions vehicle infrastructure and manufacturing. Farmers and ranchers working to eliminate pollution and greenhouse gas. Clean manufacturing. Upgrading buildings to achieve maximal energy efficiency. Building or upgrading to energy-efficient, distributed, and smart power grids. Meeting 100% of the power demand in the United States through clean, renewable, and zero-emission energy sources. It is, to say the very least, an accurate and ambitious statement of the this is the important part, of the bare minimum necessary. This huge laundry list of things that have to be done is the bare minimum required to even have a puncher's chance of mitigating the effects of global climate change. This isn't do this and it'll fix it. This is do this and we got a chance. Do this and say, okay, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is right at 30 years old. That means she was born around 1990, 1989. And at 30, give her another 50 years. We do this, she has a chance at 80 years old in 2069. She's got a chance to see the world begin to turn itself around. my grandchildren, who will be 60 by then, that is not even retirement age, still working out their final years before what is tradition. Well, hell, if the Republicans can maintain control, the retirement age by 2069 will probably be 112. Because they will see all of this. And remember, it's a net benefit if by 2050 we are at a place where we have achieved total renewable non-hydrocarbon energy generation. There's no way that's not a good thing. At least for the cause of the ongoing hopes of struggling humanity to remain a going concern as a species on this planet. One of the things that isn't in this resolution is a determination that we need to figure out some way to get off this rock and live on another planet, because that's just way too out there. But the whole thing is described as a blueprint for eventual legislative action. It's just a res. It's not a law. To draft a bill that's based on that resolution would probably be something on the order of 5,000 pages. You know, Republicans like to talk about how many pages something is. Right. But it would probably be thousands upon thousands of pages. Or a whole bunch of separate bills. Climate Interactive, Ellie Johnston is heading up their efforts. And she said, we've heard some discussion across both parties about the idea of a big infrastructure bill. That would be helpful. As someone who's worked on climate change for over a decade, it's about time, she continued. Ed Markey, senator from Massachusetts, described it as a set of principles, not prescriptions. And they're talking about a 10-year plan to mobilize every aspect of American society. That's what they mean by a Green New Deal. There wasn't anything in specific there about the issue, the climate change issue, that's nearest and dearest to my heart, because I've got a window open here in the studio right now. And it's kind of a weird thing. Knowing as I do that millions and millions of pounds of high explosives are detonated every day here in West Virginia in order to blow up our mountains, and that those detonations reduce pieces of silica to tiny little jagged pieces of glass, 1/100th the diameter of a human hair, and that wind can blow something like that a long, long way. Once you're aware of that and you walk outside and you take a big, deep breath, it's a warm, kind of overcast, rainy-ish, early February day. And then you say to yourself, what the fuck am I doing? Oh, my God, the shit that's in that. Well, what choice do you have? And this is one of those things that we've tried to hammer. Because if you live somewhere that the water gets really nasty, by the time you notice that the water is really nasty, the damage is long since done. it is a reminder that what you can't see can kill you. You know, you can live, you can live 3 or 4 days without water. You try holding your breath for 3 or 4 minutes. Even somebody who runs 10 miles a day is going to find that to be a very unpleasant experience. 40 days without food, maybe 4 days without water. You try going 5 minutes without air. Hint. Brain death. Oxygen starvation. And yet, historically, the air has been the last thing that we've thought about. Representative Paul Tonko out of New York chairs the Energy and Commerce Subcommittee on the Environment. He said, climate change is the issue of our time, the challenge of our time, the opportunity of our time. He said that yesterday as the House held 3 separate hearings on environmental-related issues, and 2 of those were specifically on climate change. Energy and Commerce Committee addressed the economic cost of global warming. Over in Natural Resources, they held a hearing on the climate, on the impacts of climate change. And then the Appropriations Committee took a look at the shutdown decisions as put forth by the Department of the Interior, led by the entirely corrupt Ryan Shrinky Zinke, now since departed. It was an interesting day. Representative Raul Grijalva said yesterday, in 2018, there were 14 weather and climate disasters, each with damages over $1 billion, for a total cost of $91 billion. Those numbers are based on work from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. North Carolina Governor Roy Cooper and Massachusetts Governor Charlie Baker, Democrat and Republican, respectively, testified about what climate change impacts have done to their coastal states. How about that? A Republican. Of course, if you're a Republican in Massachusetts, and I know folks like Kitty in Boston and Terry in Amherst, it could probably speak adequately to very well to this. Being a Republican in Massachusetts is not like, say, being a Republican in Alabama. If you're going to be a Republican in Massachusetts, you have to have at least a tangential grasp on reality. Charlie Baker said, in Massachusetts, climate change is not a partisan issue. If you have farmers or fishermen or resort operators or foresters in your communities or your districts, I promise you, they're worrying about climate change all the time. Here's the interesting thing. Just the tiniest handful of Republicans even bothered to show up. Reminds me of that old joke that Jerry Clower used to tell. It involved the voice of God coming booming out of the sky, asking Noah, who had initially evinced some resistance to the idea of ark building, and by way of explaining why, this big booming voice of God comes down out of the clouds and says, Noah, how long can you tread water? Well, you gotta wonder how long Republicans can tread water. Because despite their overt protestations of their piousness, their piety, one suspects they not only can't tread it for very long, they damn sure, as much as they'd like us to think they can't walk on it. Roy Cooper, meanwhile, said, as governor of North Carolina, I have a responsibility to keep all our people safe. And went on to say that he's trying to engage unprecedented measures just to recover from one hurricane, Hurricane Florence. As they take these few months before the beginning of the next hurricane season to pick up the pieces and wonder what the next monster storm is going to bring. Yeah. So we hadn't talked about it. We've been consumed by a particular issue for the last several days, and we'll be getting into that one in a minute as well. But I thought we would do well to make mention of all of this. The new Democratic majority is getting down to work. And this is one of those moments where we realize that they have to do the work regardless of whether or not Mitch McConnell is willing to do his damn job. Pass the legislation, send it across. And then when Mitch kills it, point at him and say, right there is the lickspittle that doesn't want your grandchildren to have a fighting chance on planet fucking Earth 40 years from now, when you're not here, but they still are. Your grandchildren, your children, are your legacy, your great-grandchildren, descendants as yet ungotten and undreamt. It's like the seven generations rule that the native cultures consider before any momentous decisions about affecting land and people. What will this do to seven generations looking out? And in the case of some of these ancient bastards, one wonders how realistically they can do that, given that they can't consider a world without them in it 10 years out. So, let's keep this stuff on the as close to the front burner as we possibly can. Think it would be a good idea? Because it feels like it would be to me. Lee, citing Bill Cosby for the how long can you tread water joke, maybe he did, but I could swear it. Well, maybe Jerry Clower didn't. Lee says it was from the time when we could enjoy Bill Cosby's comic talent. Could have sworn it was Jerry Clower. Oh, well, doesn't matter. At the very least, I know Jerry Clower was the knock him out, John. Somebody up here got to have some relief. which is also occasionally applicable. No, I said we'd get back to the story of just how screwed up Virginia is, and this country is, relative to issues of race. Like I said, sooner or later we're going to find out that just about everybody in the Virginia legislature who is white at some point in time wore blackface. Ralph Northam, and then by self-reporting, Attorney General Mark Herring. One of the people who eagerly called for Northam to resign was the majority leader of the Senate of Old Virginia, Tommy Norment, N-O-R-M-E-N-T. Oh, he ran right out there.
Well, Governor Northam has lost the confidence of the people of the Commonwealth of Virginia, and he must step down.
Oops. Turns out the yearbook of the Virginia Military Institute, which, of course, trained soldiers to commit treason against the United States during the Civil War, and sent its professor class off to be officers in said conflict. Well, their yearbook is called The Bomb. I wonder if it's still called The Bomb. I can see how that might provide a little bit of a problem in our more paranoid national security era. But Tommy Norment, who is the Senate Majority Leader, well, back in the day, in 1968, he was the managing editor of The Bomb, the yearbook at the Virginia Military Institute. And oh dear, oh dear, oh dear, the things that Tommy Norment let get into The Bomb. Not the least of which were pictures, not a picture, but pictures, plural, of lots of white boys in blackface. But Tommy Norment, managing editor of The Bomb, which is now blowing up in his face, he let a bunch of stuff buy into the yearbook, like referring to a student from Bangkok, Thailand, as both a chink and a Jap. I wonder why they didn't just go for the trifecta. Then there's another guy whose caption in the yearbook says, he was known as the Barracks Jew, having his fingers in the finances of the entire Corps of Cadets. Would that work better if we used the Lewis Black pronunciation? The Barracks Jew. Yeah. The Virginian Pilot newspaper asked Senate Majority Leader, Republican, good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual Christian Tommy Norment about the racist filth that he let into the yearbook in 1968 at the Virginia Military Institute. And he said, only thing I'm talking about today is the budget. course, last Friday, Tommy Norment signed off on a statement that read as follows. Senate Majority Leader Thomas E. Norment, Jr., R. James City, Senate Republican Caucus Chairman Ryan T. McDougal, R. Hanover, and Senate Republican Caucus Co-Chairman Mark D. Obenshain, R. Rockingham, today issued the following statement. In a government of laws dependent upon the voices and votes of the people being respected, the highest possible threshold must be set before calling on any duly elected public official to resign. The events of this week have convinced us with sadness and disappointment that that threshold has been met. The confidence of the people is essential to a governor being able to serve effectively. It is clear to us that Governor Northam no longer holds that confidence. As a physician, community leader, senator, lieutenant governor, and governor, Ralph Northam has worked to serve the Commonwealth and its citizens. For that, he deserves the thanks of all Virginians, just like Robert E. Lee does. No, I added that last part. Now, however, the time has come for him to fulfill his duty and act in the best interest of Virginia by stepping down. Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. You know what's interesting? Nobody's out there calling for Norment.
Norment?
To resign. And while he said the only thing I'm talking about is the budget, his office also refused an opportunity to comment. Proving once again the truth of the old adage that I-O-K-I-Y-A-R. It's okay if you're a Republican. Now, one interesting wrinkle that attaches to all of this is the fact that Virginia does not let a governor ever succeed himself. You cannot be a two-term governor of Virginia. One and done, baby. And so Northam may actually be able to dig in his heels and not leave. Because it would take a majority in the House of Delegates, and while I'm not certain, I presume a two-thirds majority in the Senate to impeach him. If it didn't take at least a two-thirds majority in the Senate, every Democrat since Mark Warner would have been impeached just for breathing and being a Democrat at the same time. So if he counts the numbers, I know Monique. Monique simply says, sigh. I know. This is that meme with the guy with his head in his hand, or Captain Jean-Luc Picard. Take your pick. Saying not this shit again. But yeah. But it's possible he may know that the two-thirds votes aren't there. And so he can dig his heels in and just remain governor. And put the onus back on the legislature as to whether they intend to do their job and legislate while he governs. Well, eventually, the office of Senate Majority Leader Tom and Noel meant, realized it was not a good look for them to just to go to ground and try to pretend that it didn't happen. And so here it comes. The non-apology apology that we can always expect from a Republican. The use of blackface is abhorrent in our society, and I emphatically condemn it. As one of seven working on a 359-page yearbook, I cannot endorse or associate myself with every photo, entry, or word on each page. Yeah, by the way, I'm not in any of the racist photos, and I didn't take any of them either myself, neither. I didn't do it. That's right. He was apparently one of seven who put the yearbook together, and he just threw all the other six right under the bus. Here's the problem with that, however. The other six were not the managing editor. Right. Because the managing editor is the final say-so. Isn't he? Isn't that how it works? If you want to, if that needs to be corrected, for God's sakes, please let me know. Interestingly, I have not seen yet, maybe I missed it. If you've seen it, let me know. A cacophony of choruses from Democratic presidential candidates, or even from 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, calling for Republican Senate Majority Leader of Virginia, Tom Enormant, to resign. He probably should, too. If there's some sort of a continuum here that runs from picture in blackface to I used shoe polish for a Michael Jackson act. This is not excusing any of that, by the way. If there's some sort of a continuum, though, that has that as a data point on it, then adding in data points like Barracks Jew and Chink and Jap, that seems to add more mass into the pan of the balance and make it tilt a little more toward do the right thing and resign. Plus the inclusion of people in blackface. And yes, in the 1968 edition of The Bomb, one instance of the use of that godforsaken word. And you know the word I mean. Lee in New York, subject line blackface. Yeah, it is. It's a very long list of people who performed in blackface. But I'd hazard a guess that begins to peter out, hopefully, by the late 80s. Who here remembers a late 1980s movie that featured, among other people, James Earl Jones and Ray Don Chong, called Soul Man? It's about a white kid who puts on blackface to get into law school at Harvard, if I recall the plot point correctly. Because back in the Reagan 80s, it was a big, all the Republicans were positively convinced that decent, talented, young white students were being prevented from going to fantastical law schools like Harvard because of all them goddamn quotas. Remember that? Sure you do. That's the same Reagan 80s that began with Ronald Reagan kicking off his presidential campaign, hooting like a barn owl about states' rights at the Neshoba County, Mississippi fairgrounds, not far from where Cheney, Goodman, and Shenhua were buried after being murdered by the Klan in the in the base of an earthen dam. Those Reagan 80s. Yeah, I know. Marty says, Soul Man, that was a white kid putting on blackface to attend Harvard Law School on a scholarship available only to blacks or African Americans, if you must insist. Mm-hmm. At David in South Carolina, Stan pointing out, I-O-K-I-Y-A-R plus D-T. I can remember a time when DT meant delirium tremens. Maybe it still does. Guarantee that DT would not resign if he had blackface photos surface. Hell, he could do live interviews in blackface and not be forced to resign. Look at all the racist things he's said or done. Sure. It's just like this morning, that filthy little habit that I have. Agnes and I had to take Agnes for a routine medical office visit today. And so we were up early, and there I was, and I, you know, fired up the DirecTV Now and watched a little bit of my nasty little habit and watched in stunned amazement as Joe Scarborough it launched into a tirade about the inappropriate conduct of Justin Fairfax. And the next thing I know, I mean, it's like I slipped into another dimension or time just folded itself, or space did, or the chronosynclastic infundibulum opened up and then closed back. And next thing I know, Joe's sitting there, but Hillary Clinton, Hillary Clinton, Hillary Clinton, Hillary Clinton. Monica Lewinsky, Hillary Clinton, Bill Clinton, Monica Lewinsky. And not once, did he mention the President of the United States, who in the immediate aftermath of his third wife giving birth to his fifth kid, was a rutting away on porn stars, going so far as to tell her as he climbed off of her,
"You were great. You remind me of Ivanka."
Nope, not a mention. It's like one minute it was the 1990s, and the next minute it's 2019. And Stormy Daniels, the other porn star, the $270,000 that were paid to them to keep them quiet, the fact that the $270,000 was paid as a direct and proximate result of a felonious conspiracy between Donald Trump and Michael Cohen. Jesus. Well, Monique, I understand, but it... Monique says you're a glutton for punishment watching Joe and Mika. Good Lord, man.
Well, have you seen what they're offering up on CNN? It's no better.
And it's arguably not as entertaining. Good Morning America? The Today Show? Whatever CBS is doing? And great God Almighty, no, not Fox and Fiends. And that leaves me with SportsCenter. Do you have any idea how dull SportsCenter is on a Thursday morning that ain't baseball season? I mean, yeah, college hoops and pro hoops. But my Mountaineers are, well, we're just terrible this year. I mean, really, really god-awful bad. Texas Tech whipped our ass something up into the 80s to 40-something. Maybe we crossed 50. I can't remember. So it's, and I've seen all the SpongeBobs. And we were getting ready to go to the doctor, so I really couldn't commit to a movie or anything. But I got to tell you that the screen is having a hard life from the spit takes. That was a big hot decaf spit take this morning, to go straight from Bill Clinton, Monica Lewinsky, and apparently Monica Lewinsky is Hillary Clinton's fault, to Justin Fairfax. And then of course they folded in a soupçon of what about Brett Kavanaugh. But you know what they never mentioned? They never, ever mentioned the fact that both of these stories, and I'm not saying it negates it, and there is no excuse for blackface, none. They never seem to mention that both of these stories pop not because of the intrepid journalism practiced by a respected outlet that does journalism, but that it was a 1-2 punch from a skeevy white wing website that hires people that used to work for that website that rhymes with light and fart. And then there was a bunch of bloviating about they managed to work in Al Franken. Again, without mentioning that the initial accuser had the photograph, the damning photograph, displayed on her in her office for years, and people would look at it and go, ha ha ha, looky there, you and Al Franken, ha ha, and she'd go, ha ha ha, yeah, I know. But then suddenly there was a conversation between one of the guys she worked at the skeevy right-wing radio station in L.A., and a friend of, if not, Roger Stone. And the next thing you know, Stone's tweeting out, well, here it comes, it's Al Franken's time in the barrel. Isn't it interesting that time in the barrel only, and again, please, this is not by way of an expiation or an excuse, but isn't it interesting that under these circumstances, the Democrats not only must, but are expected to throw themselves on their swords, Roman style, while Republicans get to say, the only thing I'm commenting on today is the budget. And I can't associate myself with every photo and every remark and in that whole yearbook, and I didn't take no pictures, and I was one of a team of seven, and even though I was the managing editor, I'm gonna punt this off onto six people I hope are fucking dead. Because it seems like that would
Oh, no. Oh, stop helping Steve from Georgia, Stan. You just... There's a reason I didn't mention that. Steve from Georgia, Stan said, you could always tune into Washington Journal. It's been a horror show of late. I'm doing spit takes with Morning Joe. What do you... Oh, no. When Cletus J. Thumbbutt from Busted Knuckle, Alabama, calls in and says, I don't see nothing wrong with no blackface. I never owned no slaves. There ain't nothing racist about that. No, because I can't afford a new computer, and the urges lately have been to pick up and throw. But I'm growing as a human being as I age and mature, and it's kind of like when I first started playing golf. You throw clubs and you have tantrums because everybody else is, and you think it makes you, and then you realize, wait a minute, I'm paying money to be here to do this. Let's find some zen and actually enjoy this damn game. Yeah, thank you. Thank you for having, thanks for having my back on that, Monique. Monique says, Washington Journal? Oh, God, no, I wouldn't wish that on my worst enemy. Yeah, by the way, it just... to sort of cleanse the palate, if you will, David in South Carolina, Stan, has a note for Steve from Georgia, Stan. Subject line, Steve, olives. Tell Steve thanks for getting me hooked on olives. Thanks to all of you who helped. Well, it beats the hell out of being hooked on ether, doesn't it? Well, I don't, these did stay in age, you know. Yeah, but then again, it's with the bats. The bats. So, I don't know what I don't know how this plays out. Does it just die down after a while, or do the complicit media outlets, all of which are owned by right-wing corporations, do they issue orders to stay on this, keep beating on this? I know. Well, see, that's the thing. I'm not throwing it. Lee in New York says, stop it, Bob. Stop it, Bob. Stop the technology violence today. Do not be violent to the computer. It did not make you click that icon. No, and that's why I'm not. And that's why I won't be going over to Washington Journal. And besides, that's Steve and Todd's job. And I'm contractually prevented from work in their corner. But damn. But there's even more to the story. It turns out that when protests against Ralph Northam developed earlier this week against Ralph Northam, entirely appropriate protests, some Antifa folks showed up. And they noticed that the contingent of Capitol Police who had been deployed to make sure that nobody got sideways in the process of using their First Amendment rights to petition the government for redress of grievances and demanding the governor resign because he was caught in blackface is fully appropriate within the parameters of
petitioning the government for redress of grievances. That's a grievance, and it's a legitimate one, and calling for him to resign is a form of redress. Well, one of the Capitol police officers who was on that special deployment, the Antifa folks noticed that one of the officers had a big old bandage on his neck. Well, they found out that the guy with the big old bandage on his neck was Sergeant Rob Stamm, who's 36 years old. He's been with the Capitol Police since 2014. The Capitol Police is, of course, under the direction and control of the Republican-controlled legislature. And there was something about having a big old bandage on your neck that made the Antifa folks scratch their heads and wonder a little bit, because there hadn't been any recent reports of an outbreak of vampires in and around Richmond, Virginia, which would be one obvious reason for wearing a big old bandage on your neck, because you had recently been attacked by, you know, the undead. But Antifa, being versed in the ways of American fascism, thought, hey, you know what? I bet he's got a bandage over a tattoo. Wonder what that tattoo is. So Antifa began digging through his social media looking for Sergeant Rob Stamm's other social media presences. And they kind of hit the mother load. As of yesterday, the Capitol Police issued a statement, and they said to Sergeant Stamm, placed on paid administrative leave, pending the results of a review by the division, as a result of a possible violation of division policy. Inquired of by Huffington Post, the spokesperson for the Capitol Police said that, it has to do with some social media posts. Now, at this point in time, because I'm fortunate enough to have conversations every night with one of the sharpest, wiliest, most perspicacious and perceptive radio communities in this country, you have figured out that the tattoo has a direct link to the social media posts, and the possibly offensive social media posts were not of, say, Colin Kaepernick kneeling during the national anthem. No. Turns out that Antifa was right. Rob Stamm, Sergeant Rob Stamm, is apparently a right-wing asshat. And the tattoos were not of a script reading mother. Didn't take long for him to dig and find many photos of him covered in tattoos with neo-fascist, neo-Nazi symbology, including one right smack dab on his neck, that is two crossbars away from a full-on Hakenkreuz swastika. In point of fact, in 2012, the photo of the neck tattoo was a Wolfsangel. Not quite. It went from that almost a swastika to the Wolfsangel. The Wolfsangel is used by the Nazi Party and used by the Aryan Nations-type organizations here in the United States. It was done up in red, white, black. Red, white, black is a white power, white supremacist, white nationalist color scheme. Because, among other things, red, white, black were the colors of the Nazi flag. And in 2012, he wasn't a cop. In 2012, he was a corrections officer in Virginia. And to get that job, he covered up the tattoo with something that had been morphed into an anchor. And that's what the Band-Aid was on. Also on his flesh was tattooed the Helm of Terror, Helm of Awe rune. This is, according to the Antifa article, an emblem for identifying the followers of Asatru, which is a part of the neo-Nazi fascination with Nordic pagan religious practices. I also had a big old blue iron cross. And then there were the social media posts showing him lifting weights in front of the Punisher flag, which is associated with hyper-violent cop fetish. And is associated with the Blue Lives Matter neo-fascist movement. He lifts weights while looking at the Raven banner of the Viking king Ragnar Lothbrok from the TV show Vikings. White supremacists also glommed onto that image. Let's see. Sergeant Stam, you like to read, do you, buddy? Why, yes, on Facebook, he says, among his favorite books are The Rise and Fall of the Third Reich, A History of Nazi Germany. He likes the rise part better than the fall part. His favorite Facebook pages are things like This is Europa, Marie Le Pen, Stop Farm Attacks and Murders in South Africa, because that's another white-wing neo-Nazi trope that the wild-eyed, vicious black people are out there just a-murdering the shit out of the poor white farmers in South Africa. And look, there's We Support Officer Darren Wilson, the guy who blew away... Yeah, you know. The guy who threw the match into the gasoline at Ferguson, Missouri. after he murdered Michael Brown, 18 years old, and whose criminal case was then dummied up by the district attorney in St. Louis County. Supporting police in the Baltimore riots is another of his favorite pages, as Antifa says, a number of Odinist and neo-folkish pages, namely Asatru Folk Assembly, one of which pages was actually deleted by Facebook, Mirabile Dictu, for all the hate speech that was on it. You may never have heard of Asatru Folk Assembly, but the Southern Poverty Law Center says it is the largest neo-folkish hate group in the country. And they spend their time on Facebook masturbating with one hand and typing with the other and sharing images of the white genocide taking place in South Africa. On the other hand, the Virginia Capitol Police gave an award to Sergeant Stam in 2015, an award of excellence, because he participated in an FBI training program. Now, it was the FBI who took down an Asatru white supremacist bomb plot, but at the same time, they had members of that fifth white wing fifth column organization in their very midst. And interestingly enough, the tattoos, the FBI, identification office, fingerprints, tattoos, marks, and the white supremacist tattoos weren't apparently even a clue to the FBI. Ain't that just some shit? So this was all embarrassing enough that the Virginia Capitol Police had no choice to at least give Sergeant Stam a paid vacation so he can just sit at home and draw his breath in his pay. Because cop union. And this raises the issue again, the question, how many people just like Sergeant Stam are in law enforcement and the military of the United States? I submit to you it is probably a larger number than you or I dare even consider. But considering the fact that he bears all the markings of a violent white-wing extremist, a fascist, a neo-Nazi, the very idea that Antifa was protesting, demanding that a governor who, at the very least, dallied with some of the worst aspects of modern racism, you got to wonder if he was just eat up and itching and eager for an opportunity to wade in and break some Antifa skulls. Even the FBI is worried about white-wing infiltration of law enforcement. There was a 2006 internal intelligence assessment in which they said white supremacists have historically shown an interest in infiltrating law enforcement communities or recruiting law enforcement personnel. The name of that assessment was White Supremacist Infiltration of Law Enforcement, by the way. You remember back when the one guy lost his shit and shot up a bunch of Dallas police officers? And it turned out that one of the Dallas police officers he killed was, like Sergeant Stam here, festooned with neo-Nazi tattoos. Yeah. Monique says, yeah, this is just the icing on the Virginia cake. Our country has a bigger Nazi problem than our for-profit multimillionaire media are willing to confess. And don't look for him to wake up anytime soon. Hell, Mrs. Greenspan popped up on Morning Joe this morning and read Dolt45's tweet about how cold it was, and she just breezed right past where he, you know, he wrote it in all caps, global waming, W-A-M-I-N-G, but because Mrs. Greenspan wants to make sure and normalize Trump for Merca, she just converted it to global warming because that's what she knew he meant. Lovely of her, don't you think? All right, so we did manage over the course of the first half of the program to knock the fundraising goal down to 635 dollars. That's helpful. It's very helpful indeed. And thanks to Ralphs for the challenge. Thanks to John. Thanks to Anatole for responding. Very helpful indeed. Let's take a moment, and maybe during the 6 minutes of the Green News Report, folks might feel an inclination to help knock that down a little bit further. You know, if we could just finish fundraising for one day this week, meaning we'd knocked out Monday, that would be awfully cool. So, hey, Brad, Desi, what's going on?
It's Thursday, February 7, 2019.
For the first time in 65 years, we are a net exporter of energy.
Trump's State of the Union was low on facts, but high on oil.
With climate change, the cost of failure is existential.
Democrats bring climate science back to the U.S. House. Plus,
new data from the federal government show 2018 was the fourth hottest year since scientists began keeping records in 1880.
So it is hot in here. I'm not crazy.
Well,
all of those stories and more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Carbon is killing us. Mexicans are not.
This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, I was happy to see watching CNN after the State of the Union address that I was not the only one who thought it was disgraceful that Donald Trump did not talk about climate change during that address.
Yes, and we will get to that in a moment. But first, NOAA and NASA both on Wednesday finally officially confirmed that 2018 was the fourth warmest year ever recorded globally, thanks to man-made climate change.
What took them so long?
Well, that announcement had been delayed by the government shutdown.
Oh.
That means that the last 5 years, going back to 2014, have all been the five hottest years on record. Nationally, NASA said rainfall is also trending upward. 2018 was the third wettest year in the overall U.S., and 9 eastern states experienced their wettest years ever.
Well, it's great to have the American scientists back at work.
British meteorologists are predicting that the next 5 years will be even hotter than 2018 was. And NOAA announced this week that in 2018, extreme weather disasters like wildfires, hurricanes, and floods killed 247 Americans and caused $100 billion in damages.
Maybe I liked it better when they were furloughed and we didn't have to know about that.
So keep all of those facts in mind as we turn to President Trump's State of the Union address on Tuesday night. Trump did not mention climate change at all in the address, or the Americans killed in extreme weather disasters over the past year, or even the booming U.S. renewable energy industry. But Trump did tout his rollbacks of pollution regulations and inaccurately took credit for booming U.S. oil and gas production.
The United States is now the number one producer of oil and natural gas anywhere in the world.
Now that is a remarkable shift, and it does have significant consequences.
Finally, you're giving my president some credit.
But oil and gas production was already surging when Trump took office due to actions taken by previous presidents Bush and Obama. And the U.S. became the top oil exporter in the world all the way back in 2013.
Huh. Trump didn't mention that when he gave himself credit.
Climate change did rate a mention in the Democratic response to the State of the Union delivered by Georgia Democratic gubernatorial candidate Stacey Abrams.
We can do so much more. Take action on climate change.
And then there was this surprising post-speech exchange on CNN when former Republican Senator Rick Santorum asserted that, of course, Trump didn't mention climate change because his base denies it. But CNN's John King was having none of it.
Every leader, whatever your party, should be talking about climate change. It's just, well, you could have a debate about what to do about it. But he's the president of the United States at this moment in the world did not mention climate change in even a sentence. Is just frankly a disgrace.
Wow, that was John King?
Yes.
On CNN?
Yes.
Wow.
And on Wednesday, the House Majority Democrats brought climate science and policy back to Congress with a flurry of committee hearings to begin debate over potential U.S. climate policy responses, like the as-yet undefined Green New Deal. Here's Congressman Frank Pallone of New Jersey in the House Energy and Commerce Committee on Wednesday.
I know there are those who believe we can't address this problem because of costs are too high. But the costs of not acting are far higher and a lot more painful.
Now, in these hearings, House Republicans attacked the very idea of a Green New Deal, calling it socialism and Soviet-style government overreach, despite polls that show 80% of voters from both parties strongly support its main goals. So you can expect a flood of scary right-wing fear-mongering and false claims about any Green New Deal that might emerge. And, of course, expect them to ignore the enormous costs of climate change that are occurring right now and omit the benefits of, you know, averting catastrophe.
I would expect no less from this crowd. As a matter of fact, we are seeing it already. Just turn on Fox News. They are doing anything and everything they can to undermine a Green New Deal on behalf of their fossil-fueled bosses.
Oh, yeah, the scaremongering is strong right now.
For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Don't forget you can download our reports anytime via Stitcher, TuneIn, iTunes, or Google Play. Find us, follow us, and share us planet-wide on the Facebooks and the Twitters. At Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Don't be afraid, don't be afraid, your heart's been repaid. Don't be afraid, don't be afraid, your soul not betrayed.
And let's see, is this anything? We remain at 6:35 for the evening, so yeah, there's that. Before I run over to the phones, just a couple of notes, a note. It was National Prayer Breakfast time again. Where does the time go? And lo and behold,
Julius Geezer showed up for it. In rare form. And if you ever wondered just how much nerve these un-American theocratic freaks have, well, this is a pretty good measure. After the National Prayer Breakfast was exposed for its predilection for canoodling with Mother Russia, including Maria Butina, you'd think that maybe they would have gone to ground. But if you thought that, you'd be wrong. Oh, hell yeah. Courtesy of News Ninja Gene, a news story from over at Boing Boing, pointing out that, well, maybe Dr. Ronnie Candyman Jackson had a hard time getting the dosage right again yesterday at the National Prayer Breakfast. Or rather, today. This is a dandy. You might want to get the hockey puck. Mm-hmm. Working. Kind of hard to believe that this is really something that happened, but it did. He's going to brazen it out. He'll go talk to the National Ruble Association. He'll talk to the National Russian Prayer Breakfast, because he's got to keep his handlers happy.
Since the founding of our nation, many of our greatest strides, from gaining our independence to abolition of civil rights to extending the vote for women, have been led by people of faith and started in prayer.
Let's hear that again. Now, when you hear this, you know he's dealing with a teleprompter, and he does not deal well with a teleprompter at all because he's barely goddamn literate. And I can tell you exactly what was on the teleprompter, but he blew it. Because what was on the teleprompter, well, let's get the clip again.
Since the founding of our nation, many of our greatest strides, from gaining our independence to abolition of civil rights to extending the vote for women, have been led by people of faith and started in prayer.
He got completely lost. To abolition of civil rights? Julius Geezer? Abolition of civil rights is what happens in the Dred Scott decision, you goddamn dummy. You ignorant jackass. You addle-pated moron. You white supremacist son of a Klansman, son of privilege. You. The abolition. So what it was many of our nation's greatest moments, from our independence to abolition to civil rights. This is another one of those little Trump is a white supremacist tells. Donald Trump
doesn't know what abolition means. How's about that? There's nobody in the Horn Family Community Congregation who doesn't know what abolition means. It means to abolish. And it has a particular usage when you call it the capital A abolition, capital M movement. And that is the movement that began in the early to mid 19th century, largely in New England, largely with people like William Lloyd Garrison, but God knows there were so many others, demanding that the concept and practice of chattel slavery be ended in these United States. It saw its most violent pre-Civil War manifestation in the raid by John Brown on the armory at Harper's Ferry, Virginia, which, after it proved unsuccessful, led one Robert E. Lee to preside over the hanging of John Brown for treason against the state of Virginia, which was impossible to begin with because John Brown was not a goddamn Virginian. John Brown was a Kansan. But doing things extra legal, not giving much of a good goddamn about the Constitution of the United States, has ever been a hallmark of the Old Dominion. Hasn't it now? But that's abolition. Yeah, I'm afraid that one may have hurt our buddy Michael in Madison. All caps. Abolition of civil rights? What? Yep. It began in prayer. And, you know, even when he's wrong, he has a way of being right. Because all over the South, there were preachers and white folks who prayed and prayed and prayed that the civil rights of newly freed slaves would be abolished. But we all know that the book of James says faith without works is dead. So in addition to praying, they took to the streets. They founded the Christian Order of the Knights of the Ku Klux Klan. And they set about abolishing the newly recognized civil rights of freedmen. The goddess of irony does not mess around. Now, what's particularly humorous is that the day prior, yesterday, Trump declared, "When I say something you might think is a gaffe, it's on purpose. It's not a gaffe. I don't know what a gaffe is, but it isn't one." I added that last part. Now, what's that clarity? Bob, Bob, Bob. Uh-oh. Yeah, your gimmick infringing clarity. You'll probably hear from Ron's lawyers. J. Noble Baggett. He makes those errors to endear himself, because the maggots like thinking he's dumbed down and not an elitist in the least sense of the word. Charmed by the stupidity of DJT. The abolition of civil rights. Yeah. How I wish I was joking. Damn. Well, what came after that?
When we open our hearts to faith, we fill our hearts with love. Many of the people in this room lead and support the charities and faith-based institutions that bring hope, to the lives of our citizens, comfort to those in despair, and solace to those in grief, aid to those in need, and a helping hand to the struggling people all around the world, of which there are so many.
He added the "of which there are so many." Statements that are patently obvious, those are usually his. Maybe it's because the teleprompter's running slowly, or maybe he's just trying to make himself appear to be wiser than he, but it doesn't work. But there we have it, the abolition of civil rights. Jesus God. Hey, thanks very kindly to Scott up in Wisconsin. We talked briefly with Scott last night. Thank you, Scott. Scott just took us down to $600 to go. So we have actually taken care of fully one day of funding, and that's huge. And now I have a message from Robert in Australia. I'd like any three people who can, without causing themselves a problem, to match my challenge with a total of $105. $105 Australian is $71.84 U.S. The exchange rate sucks. As it's now 86 degrees Fahrenheit, I'm off to the local mall, Robert says, to sit in the air conditioning for a while. I'll catch the program later this Arvo, as my iPod battery finally completely died and the four-year-old iPod no longer works. Signed, Robert in Oz. So there is a $105 challenge on the table. We will call it the Robert in Australia Let's Go Sit in the AC till the Arvo challenge. So Robert will double what comes in up to $105, and that will take us that'll take a whopping bite out of what we've got left, and that would get us down to just $400, which would mean just today and yesterday would be left uncovered and make tomorrow a lot more miraculous for Friday on the front porch. So Robert in Australia's challenge is on the table here as we enter the third hour of the program. Thank you, Robert, so much. Be careful in the heat. And based on, well, but you know, you're down there in New South Wales, so I guess you don't have to worry about crocodiles and snakes in the streets like they do up in Queensland. It was long ago that Robert taught me about the banana benders. That's what you are if you're in Queensland. You know, up Brisbane, roundabout there. Thank you, Robert. Thank you very kindly. And with any luck at all, we'll knock that $105 out in short order and not be talking about it here as the program moves toward its conclusion. Oh, let me see here. Just a couple of things before we go to the phones. Checking messages. Now let's go over and check in with Scott out in San Diego. Hey, Scott. Scott.
It works better if you unmute it. Jesus.
Ever so All much right. more. Yes, I must I, agree.
Esting, Elephone, Irking, Irmy, A, Ollie, Alu. Anyway, so you piqued my curiosity, Bob. Now I need to know. Now I believe the whole Horn family and the entire world listening wants
do
to
Do not
know.
Ask me any detail about Naked Radio here. There's a reason we don't do video.
Oh no! I'm beyond that. I'm over that. Banana benders. What the hell's a banana bender?
I asked the same thing. And apparently, to be a banana bender is to be sort of doulas.
Sort of what?
Doulas.
Without do.
You don't speak that.
Like
that can't.
Morning dew?
No, D O L E S S. To
oh,
be,
Stop it, Bob. I have no idea. You're talking Mandarin. What the hell's going on? Hello, is this Bob?
You know, bananas are already bent.
It's the nature of the way that they grow.
Right. And apparently, if you're a banana bender, that means you don't do much of anything. You're do less.
Ah.
Jesus, you would have thought I'd said gormless.
No, I don't. Ever since you've gotten that damn dictionary that you could kill someone with if you dropped it from the proper height.
Unlike Kirsten Gillibrand, I don't keep a loaded rifle under our bed. I keep those two volumes of the Oxford English, the abridged, by God.
Abridged, yeah.
Oxford Dictionary of the English Language, because you're absolutely right. That thing, you can swing that thing like the Warhammer of Thor. Damn Skippy. Where'd you go?
Hello?
Yeah, you're back now.
No, I didn't do it. It was on your end that time.
No, that's just because Microsoft owns Skype.
Oh.
Yeah, lately the calls have just been going and gone, and then they come back, and I'm sitting there doing highly professional radio saying, are we reaching?
Yeah. Well, okay. What time of day was this national prayer breakfast? I'm assuming it was like 8 in the morning.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is it possible?
That's why it's not the National Prayer Luncheon.
Well, yeah. But sometimes, you know, they'll do it at a decent hour, like 9:30 in the morning. But, wait a minute. Now I'm going to sneeze. No, I'm not going to sneeze. Am I going to sneeze? No, not for now. You were saying that Trump's delivery had to do possibly with the teleprompter. I would bet you that he was up from the night before, didn't even bother having his presidential nap.
Oh, no, he'd been up since about 4 o'clock in the morning, did some twooping, it probably takes a couple of rails of Adderall just to get him conscious at this point.
Well, I mean, my point is his cadence, his speaking, I don't even think it was totally the teleprompter. He was dragging. So this was what, yesterday morning?
Well, no, you talk slowly like that because it's the National Prayer Breakfast and you want to sound serious and you've got to have some gravitas. You know, you put that on the bagel with a little schmear and maybe some thinly sliced red onions and capers and tomatoes, some gravitas. Sorry, that just...
Well,
All humor is attempted humor, Scott.
I know. I just tend to think that he's losing it more quickly than anyone anticipated.
Oh, I think you're using a participial form of the verb lose. I'm going for the past perfect, lost.
Oh, he's lost it, all right. And speaking of breakfast, see, I got two.
Actually had lost, but go ahead.
Here's a sign of the end times. I get a lot of my pipe tobacco from a place called Pipes and Cigars up in Pennsylvania. It's a website.
Catchy name.
Huh? Yeah, well, that's what they do, pipes and cigars. And they send me emails every so often to tell me what's on sale. And today's email brought word that there's a blend of tobacco. It's a lovely blend. It's an aromatic blend of Cavendish and Virginia, number 3 on the balance scale, number 2 on the mellow scale. And it's called Scotty's Pancake. And you might say, well, what about this? What is this stuff? Apparently, it has the aroma and flavor of blueberry pancakes made from scratch with a hint of vanilla and maple.
Oh, and Jesus, the wine snobbery. We started with wine snobbery.
Well, you know, it's got lovely notes of cherries and old baseball glove.
And that moved into beer, and they fucked up. So now the snobs are fucking up pipe tobacco. Is that what you're telling me?
Well, it's just there comes a time. I mean, I like a decent aromatic just as well as the next guy. but I don't want to have it be like I'm smoking breakfast. I'm almost tempted to buy an ounce of this stuff just to find out if it is as advertised. But I'm not going to do that. I'm going to resist the temptation.
So what's an OZ of Virginia Burley and Cavendish go for these days on the open market?
This particular blend, if you buy 1 to 3 ounces, it's $2.98 per.
Jesus, that's almost as much as a quarter pound of weed. Oh wait, you mean $2.98? Sorry.
Yeah, $2.98. Come on, Bob. This is. But a lot of the Scott or Scotty who blended this tobacco has blended a number of blends, and you can get a 1 pound bag of any of his blends for $39.99.
How long would it take you to go through a pound, though? Honestly,
you and I both would be dead by the time I went through a pound of tobacco. Because since I've begun smoking a pipe again, maybe 2 or 3 times a week, I'll step out front with whatever my chosen blend is,
So maybe 1, 2 or 3 times a week, you'll step out into the frigid Arctic blast of winter in San Diego.
Shut up, Bob. Shut up, Bob. No, it's
my job, Scott.
I know. You done caught me again. Yeah, so that's like a bowl full. And a bowl full is just a tiny, it's a couple of good pinches into the bowl, pack it down a little, light it up, tamp it, light it again, and you're off to the races. But, okay, God, going through a pound. Yes, I would be dead. You would be dead. The world would have cooled or warmed to an inappropriate point, and that would be that. So, well, as you were speaking earlier, by the way, about the ongoing drama in Virginia, I was going through my old Facebook stuff and found a cartoon memory, which I think is appropriate for some of the street corners in Virginia. But then I thought that there might be another version of it that's appropriate for a number of the street corners in Virginia. So around Virginia, you got people on the street corners saying either, forget it, Jake, it's Funky Town. Or you have people in Virginia saying, forget it, Jake, it's Fuhrer Town. That's pretty much where we're at.
Well, right, because... And look, I don't mean to turn this program into what Bob saw on Morning Joe this morning. I really, really don't. But every now and then, I just see something that beggars my credulity. And in this particular instance, the fact that Joe Scarborough can go zero to Hillary in a time space that cannot be calculated by modern science,
it leads to this question, Bob, and there's a version of the same question for Todd and Steve and their Washington Journal habit. And the question is this: are you surprised?
No, and you know what? To Steve, to Todd, and to me, there's also the question of, to what extent does this constitute self-abuse, and not the fun kind?
Yeah, yeah. Well, and it's
I view it the way, you know, there are people out there that can't stand spicy food. I'm not that guy. I love spicy food. I love a really, really kick-ass Thai curry that makes my head sweat and the real endorphin rush kicks in and it's really a buzz and you wonder for a minute, like, am I going to make it through this? And
talk me down.
And to other people, it's like, why would you torment yourself like that? Now, I try to be a moderate about it, a centrist. I try to be a neoliberal establishment shill about it. I don't sit around just munching on fucking ghost peppers and shit like that.
Yeah.
But I like that little bit of burn. Yeah. I have a confession to make. Like I told Tracy the other night, she sent me those two bottles of TJ's Yuzu hot sauce.
Oh, yeah, I heard you talking about that stuff. It sounds good. I might even try
it. Oh, it's fantastic, and I've taken to sipping on it.
Oh, no. Come on now. That's one of the first signs, Bob.
Well, it is. I know.
You have a...
Andy, he was drinking it.
He had a little Knockwheel cup, and he goes...
But it...
I'm surprised you haven't tried to light it, or chemically, you know, add some ether or something to it so that you can make
no,
it.
No, you know, I'm just blowing through the studio because I'm keeping the unopened bottle is in the kitchen. The open bottle is back here because it's been kind of cool.
You're and, a secret drinker.
So, you know, I'll just be toddling out to the car. I'll be toddling out to the car because, you know, I forgot to bring my coat in or whatever. And I'll just say, hey, there's... And I'll just stop and pop the top and just bloop, you know, a little taste and move on.
You're further gone than I thought, Bob.
Oh, you know, I'm powerless over this stuff. And I posted a photo of the bottles along with Baby Groot, who now protects the studio alongside with Pete the Gargoyle. And immediately, Tim from L.A. chimed in and said, you sure you're not part Japanese? And I'm like, I'd like to try. Because he told me that his mom has one of these yuzu trees, which is a form of citrus that I guess originally grows in Japan. And you wouldn't like, I guess you wouldn't like want to squeeze the juice on fish or anything because it's incredibly bitter. But yeah. She dries them and I guess you shave the... You grate the skin, and he said that his mom mixes it with hot peppers, and it'll burn the hairs out of your nose. And I thought, what a lovely way to spend an afternoon.
And tell me the name of the stuff that Tracy sent you, because I'm gonna.
And it's not all that hot. This stuff isn't. It's just pleasant.
See, I can't have anything real, real hot, so this would probably be right up my alley.
I mean, it's hot. You'll know it. I mean, I get a little buzz when I go by and grab a swig. I've been sipping hot sauce for years, man. I'm powerless over hot sauce, and my life has become unmanageable.
It's good to know that you are coming to grips with it on some level.
But everything changed when I got this bottle up in Arlington, and then Tracy sent this along. It is simply labeled Trader Joe's Yuzu, Y-U-Z-U, hot sauce, simultaneously spicy and citrusy fragrant.
I've got to go to Ralph's tonight, and there's a Trader Joe's like three doors down from the Ralph's. So I don't think
this is going to like be a problem for you.
Well, that's what everyone says when they're starting.
Yeah, hey kids, the first one's free.
Yeah, the old dope peddler.
But
spicy sauce peddler.
But see, I'm one of those weirdos who, you know, back in my potent potables days, I used to love something called a Cajun martini. And you can use...
Oh, wait a minute. Give me a moment. Let me see if I can think that one through. A Cajun martini.
Yes.
Well, rice. There wouldn't be rice because it would suck up all the liquid. Wow. Instead of a lemon twist, there's a
no. What you do is you know, if you're one of those heretics who uses vodka in martinis, well, I can't do anything to help you. But
hey.
You know my feelings about vodka. We use gin, and you take a fifth of gin and you pour it in a quart mason jar.
Holy fuck!
Well, I mean, I didn't say this was going to be easy.
Any drink recipe that begins with you take a fifth of gin.
Right. Step one, pour fifth of gin in quart mason jar.
Rearrange the letters, and it spells out, admit you are powerless. There you go, right there.
Yep.
But go ahead.
And so then you take a couple of jalapenos.
Oh, now it's getting good.
And you take the tops off of them, and you split them, and you scrape them. And you drop them in the gin.
Which is in the mason jar.
Yes.
Okay.
And then you take one of those evil, wicked, long, skinny, painful, like Thai chilies or a cayenne, and you do not split it, and it's dried usually, and you drop that little bastard in. And you screw the lid on the mason jar and stick it in the freezer for about 2 weeks. And then when you go to make your martinis, instead of vermouth, you use usually a little blast of clear hot sauce. And you rim your martini glass with Tony Sacheri's.
Oh, Lord.
And for the garnish, you use the jalapeno stuffed olives.
Jesus. I would... Do you have to have the fire marshal present when you consume these?
We used to many years ago. We would prep these things, forego the Tony Sacheri's, put it in one of those Aladdin... the thermos jugs like you take to the construction site.
Yeah, I thought you were going to say Aladdin camping lamp.
No, not Aladdin. Stanley.
Okay.
You know, the green ones. And head for the golf course.
Oh, God. Even I would like golf with a couple of those, a couple of belts of that.
And when we did that, we felt like we were golfing in the company of the ghost of W.C. Fields.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and the corpse of John Barrymore.
You know, I almost feel wistful talking about all that.
I was watching a thing on YouTube, and oh, by the way, did you get that thing I sent you in the wee hours this morning? Henry Fonda as Clarence Darrow.
Yes, and in fact, I had seen that years ago. I need to go back and rewatch it.
Oh, watch it again. It'll resonate even more in today's world. Oh, it was great. I hadn't seen it. I'd heard of it. I heard of the one-man show that he did. I believe he toured it. But that quote from Hiram Johnson.
Oh, that was profound. By the way, we have had a communique from Robert in Australia, who was not quite out the door yet, heading out to cool down. Bob, subject line, stalking strong. Best I can do. I'm a banana bender, Robert says. I was born in Queensland here in Australia. Everyone from Queensland is known as a banana bender. The bananas grow straight in Queensland, and we have to bend them before we ship them out. Now, as for stalking strong...
Wait a minute. My around-the-corner neighbor, when I was growing up in the 60s, had a banana tree, and he kept it inside in the winter. But I have seen how bananas grow. Some people probably think...
Well, that's because you're in the Northern Hemisphere. Jesus, man, think.
Oh, no, come
on. but as for stalking strong, Arvo, afternoon, Agnesha, air conditioner, and Agnesha, in other words, I'm going to the mall for the... I'm going to mall to the Arvo for the Agnesha. I'm working on it, Robert. I'm working on it. When I get down there, I'm going to sound like... No, I won't. I'll give myself... listen to that hillbilly trying to stand like ass. P.S., Robert says, it's not the heat. I'm used to that. It's the humidity. I'm dripping wet. Oh, so Sydney has transformed into New Orleans. Son of a bitch. How about that? Climate change is real.
What did you say? Was 85 or 81?
It was 86 at 10 a.m.
Now Fahrenheit is the
yeah, he translates. Robert translates for us because he knows that Celsius is utterly meaningless to me.
Yeah, yeah. Well, 85 is not that hot, really. What is the weather usually like down there?
Well, but again, he says that the heat he can handle. It's the humidity, and the humidity is just off the chain. Mm, okay. Oh damn! I've got on the wrong side of Tracy. Mm-mm-mm. Subject line, cutting you off. Bob. I will not contribute to your habit. I'm not going to be your enabler. My new theme song will not be Curtis Mayfield's I'm Your Pusher Man. I love you too much to contribute to your downfall. Please get help before you hit rock bottom. Love, your former drug dealer, Tracy Superfly Porter. Okay, maybe one more score before I get out of the game. Oh, God. Tracy Superfly. Oh, help. Oh, man.
Visions in my head here, Bob. Visions in my head.
Well, at least I'm not cooking that shit in a spoon before I stick it in my mouth. I mean...
Who did the rock song, God Damn the Pusher Man? Was that Cream or Steppenwolf or...
Well, fortunately, we have the internet.
That came to
Steppenwolf,
mind,
the pusher.
Steppenwolf, yeah.
Yeah.
That didn't get a lot of airplay because of the... not profanity, but... profane lyric.
Well, what I love the first verse, though, and I said, God damn that Bible pushing man. Mm-hmm.
I remember the first time I heard God Damn It on the radio. It was in, I don't know, 69, I guess, 70, maybe early 70. On Sunday night, there was a radio station, one of the FM stations, that normally played oldies, but on Sunday night they had specialty shows, and they had a 2 or 3 hour jazz show, and it was Eddie Harris and song. And I love it. There's a Chirps, what is the deal, kitty? Come on in here. I think she forgets where I am.
Yeah, see, Andy the Angry Jew knows, knowing that I'm a big old Buffett fan from way back, knows where I got the idea. We went out and learned how to make them. And yes, from the song We Are the People Our Parents Warned Us About, because I love Cajun martinis and afternoon golf. And that's exactly what we used to do.
That sounds like a song lyric.
It is a song lyric. It's from We Are the People Our Parents Warned Us About.
Oh, okay. I thought that... Okay. That was also a Nicholas von Hoffman book title.
That's where Buffett got it.
Okay. How do I know this stuff? Here's the deal. I've been around a while.
Look, you're an old radio guy. You are required to have an absolute storehouse of esoteric knowledge that you can access at a moment's notice.
Well, you know why? Because when the network goes down, you've got to be able to talk intelligently for 2 minutes about virtually any topic known to man.
Yes. Yes, you do.
It's the old ad lib.
Oh, and let me take a minute to thank Jack in Shreveport. Jack in Shreveport did the biggest part of half of Robert's challenge, so we've only got $55 to go on that. Thank you very kindly to Jack in Shreveport. Hopefully, you'll get some company, and we'll get us down to just $400 to go, which would be huge.
Well, speaking of fundraising, I was going to mail your my little bit today, but I'm not going to be able to do it till tomorrow because I've got a doctor's appointment tomorrow, and I'll mail it when I'm coming back from that. Pardon me. Well, there was something.
Oh, by the way, Ron and Raleigh with a note. Now, wait a minute. Folks are becoming quite bold with their gimmick infringement. They will be receiving cease and desist orders post-haste. I've been too lax. Because we've had two Bob violations in 2 days.
We had two of them today.
Yeah, that's, they all run together after a while for me, forgive me.
Yeah. I used to air check myself to death back when I was doing over-the-air radio in the 80s.
Oh, I don't know how many of the first several years of the Horn I listened to every program.
Yeah.
And
it's much longer. The process is much longer with talk radio because with music, most of the stations are set up to where the recording device that does the air check only records when the mic is open because the parts that you want to capture are what the DJ is doing.
Yeah.
But I remember listening to air checks years later, having no conscious memory of a hilarious bit or something that I did, a line or whatever. Or you run into people that you haven't seen for a while who knew you from radio, and they'll say, you remember that time when you know, and then they'll relate the thing. No memory of it whatsoever. And it's weird to hear, especially to hear yourself.
Well, here's an air check you may never have heard.
Oh, no. Okay.
And this is just, when you think about the number of people he recently fucked, the number of lives he's damaged, the number of people he's insulted, like, call me back when you get that bone out of your nose, or black people major in robbing liquor stores. Or, you know, I'm talking about, of course, Flush Flimball, the oxymoron. Well, as far back as 1972, he was just a shitty little DJ.
Oh, yeah.
Well, here it is. And the funny thing is, there's stuff in, I've heard it before, there's stuff in this air check you can actually hear that's part of his everyday radio shtick.
Oh, yeah.
That Target to Messina with a song and the answer to the musical question, Whatever Happened to Fibber McGee? I want to congratulate our name it and claim it winner, Jeff Rodman of Eastmont. Jeff wins copy of Going Up the Country by the Canned Heat in 1968 or 69. Take your pick. And also, Jeff, I will send you 2 6-packs of Carefree Sugarless Gum. You can chew it all day. And that'll entitle you to 12 more entries for you in the Carefree Rock Concert Contest. That's a tongue twister. Keep listening to the Jeff Christie Stardust Jockey Show for complete details about this contest. Well, we've had 2 cash call winners today, folks. A grand total of $624.
Jesus. Yeah.
And he went on to be...
Well, he found a gay man who taught him how to dress and taught him how to talk and taught him how to act. Literally.
Yeah.
And the rest is history.
See, this is what we get for having TV executives back in the day who thought it would be a good idea to hire Morton Downey Jr. to do a syndicated daily TV talk show.
Well, this is also what we get with, and I'm not necessarily a fan of the fairness doctrine, but this is also what you get when you get rid of the fairness doctrine, because that's the only way right-wing radio was able to rise to prominence. Because once Reagan did away with the fairness doctrine, it meant no opposing viewpoints need be aired.
Yeah.
And so AM radio got turned into a sewer of neo-Nazi white-wing hate. There you go.
Will we ever find our way back in terms of rationality and because we're
no,
both
I think
old
the,
enough
the,
to...
No, that genie's not going back in the bottle, Scott.
But I don't mean exactly the same as things used to be, because you can never go back to used to be. But there are core principles that are emphasized and then they're not, but sometimes they get emphasized again in a meaningful way. I find myself wondering this. I'm sitting here watching the oh God, I had a vision of hell itself, trying to sit here and watch the State of the Union the other night, on and on and on, and that dopey cadence bopping along on the slow-moving teleprompter of life, and Pence sitting there like, you know, a pillar of salt, and Nancy giving hand cues to, you know, her side of the aisle. It doesn't get any more tedious to listen to that moron.
Well, that's precisely why I said what I've said relative to the State of the Union. If you know American history and you know anything about the Constitution, you know it's not required to be a speech. This is just spectacle, okay?
Yeah.
This is pomp and circumstance. This is the desire to create something that looks regal when we're not supposed to be a goddamn kingdom in the first place. Mr. Speaker, and you know, he even ran over Nancy Pelosi. He is there at her sufferance.
Oh, yeah. She's supposed to do the intro.
And no, that didn't just got up and but, you know, the Adderall said, go, man, go, man, go, man, go, man, go, man. Yeah. Can you imagine watching that slow crawling teleprompter under the influence of a few rails of Adderall?
It's like he has deteriorated to the point where I don't know if anyone listening has ever seen one of those teleprompters operating, but there are like segments, paragraphs, whatever. And literally on teleprompters for major speeches, there'll be bracket and then the words pause for applause or hold for applause, and then the text continues. I'm surprised that in his
My fellow Americans
speeches,
hold for applause.
Yeah. Or, you know, like a what they used to call a donut commercial in radio, where there's a little jingle, and then there's a musical interlude for 28 seconds, and then the jingle gives a sting at the end. Well, for the middle of the thing, it says, you know, hurry on down to your insert local store name, you know, for bargains galore on, you know, whatever the client is. You know, he's president insert announcer's name is who he is. I was surprised Reagan didn't do that there toward the end. And maybe he did and I missed it. But it's a serious question. We have got to get back to some core principles here. I mean, Exhibit A in my argument is the Commonwealth of Virginia in political meltdown. What the fuck? Or what does Tracy say? There's a certain way that she puts it that I love that I can never recall when I need it.
Only Tracy can be Tracy.
Yeah. But we're at that point. It's like...
Tracy did, however, say, breathe, Scott.
Okay, all right. I was relatively calm when I started this exercise talking about blueberry pancake pipe tobacco. I've gone off the edge. And that's scary when I go off the edge. Maybe I ought to just go. So I was so delighted to hear Scott from, was it Wisconsin, call last night?
Yes.
It is so nice to hear a new caller. Not to say that there's anything wrong with the old callers, myself included. But variety is the spice of life. And I love hearing from new people. Come on, new people. It's so simple. If I can make contact with the Horn program via Skype or the Stress Line, certainly you can. And you've got important stuff to say. Come on, people.
Yes, you do, neighbor.
Smile on your brother. Oh, by the way, that prompts a TV viewing tip. Won't You Be My Neighbor, I believe is the title of the Mr. Rogers documentary that was in theaters recently. It's going to be on PBS in the next few days, and I believe it's also going to be on HBO this weekend.
Oh, and what you meant earlier was what the entire fuck.
Yeah, there you go. What the entire fuck, people? What's going on? and I don't want to do gimmick infringement, but I love What the Entire Fuck. I may get a tattoo. It'll be my first. And I don't know where I'll put it. Probably on my forehead. You know, and I wear my hat, my fedora, way down low. And if somebody gets crazy with me, I'll whip off my hat and stick my forehead right in their face. What the entire fuck?
Oh, by the way, you have been nominated for a cowbell.
Oh, no.
Courtesy of Jenny in Wisconsin, who says, slow-moving teleprompter of life really should get a cowbell. And it now has.
I'm overwhelmed. I hardly know who to thank. I hardly know what to say.
Well, Jenny in Wisconsin, it's not that hard, Scott.
Okay, you're right. You're absolutely right. But it's just, I wish we would could get a handle on things. And I know it's, and this will be my last point, and then I'll go away. The other night, I'm trying to think what channel it was. It was one of the newscasts in the evening, or it might have been the PBS NewsHour. The reporter was talking to Mike Pence. I do not trust this guy at all. Back in the day, he was a radio guy, a Rush Limbaugh wannabe in Indiana with hateful radio talk, you know, religious, so-called. I mean, religious in quotes. You know, to the right of Attila the Hun, just a sleazy, yucky. It's like you want to scrape the bottom of your shoes or something after you've been in proximity to the guy. And this, he's what awaits us. That's the only thing that frightens me about Trump stepping down or otherwise leaving the scene. Pence is no angel. I mean, I'm not interested in more of the same.
Oh, Jesus. We've got by the way, this is almost turning into like a telethon, a bad, bad, bad telethon.
What are we finding?
We've got another one. Agnes just sent this to me from the Washington Post.
Oh, no.
A photo of Joy Behar dressed as a beautiful African woman resurfaces amid renewed attention to the issue of blackface. What is it?
I don't know, Bob. Last night or night before, you were talking about, I think, I don't know, it was with Tracy or someone. I think it was Tracy. You're talking about Nappy-Headed Ho on the Don Imus radio program 10 years ago. 11 years ago, whatever it was. And in fairness, or at least in the interest of giving the full story, he actually did have integrity enough to go to the coach and all the players of the Rutgers women's basketball team.
And apologize.
Not only apologize, but sat in dialogue with them and let them all ream him a new one for 90 minutes, saying how those words affected those women and that school. And he was seriously chastened. And he's a recovering cocaine addict and alcoholic. And so he was open to the possibility of taking a bad thing and having some good come out of it. Now, I wouldn't say that having Morning Joe is good having come out of it. Far be it from me to say that. I think, what's her name? Who's the L.A.-based female morning radio woman who tried out for a week on that slot? What is her name? I used to listen to her.
Oh, Stephanie Miller?
Stephanie Miller. I think Stephanie Miller would have been a fine morning show. And might have prompted other networks.
Yeah, but no way were they going to give that magnificently valuable airtime to someone even remotely considered to be liberal.
Well, teamer with an idiot. That's how you get around that. You know, preferably a male idiot. Those are the best kinds. You know. Yeah. So Morning Joe is. we have.
Well, I'm just waiting for the picture of Morning Joe in blackface, Joe Scarborough in blackface to come out.
How is it that people?
Well, wait. Okay, wait. This is a psychological thing. Hold on.
All right.
Could it be that so-called liberals, so-called Democrats, are actually so tone-deaf that they think that they can get away with it because they're already sensitive to issues out of the community? This is not a defense. Whereas most Republicans go, oh, fuck, no. We'll get pilloried. Nah, I don't think so, because that doesn't explain the recently booted Attorney General of Florida. In the case of Joy Behar, they actually broadcasted it on the program back in 2016.
What the fucking circumstances could have prompted?
She was doing that.
I mean,
okay. So this is how that one comes up, and I mean, this is just weird. She brought up a New York Times op-ed that praised naturally curly hair. And so then she showed a picture of when she was 29 years old, and she said, I used a slightly darker skin tone makeup than I ordinarily wear, but that really is my curly hair. And it was a Halloween party when she was 29. And she went as a beautiful African woman.
And what time frame was this? How long?
This
ago?
Is two. Well, that it happened when she was 29, which would be rather a long time ago.
Well, I was hoping you'd put it in a slightly more neutral way.
40 years, probably.
Yeah.
Raven Simone was on the panel that morning, and she asked her if she used tanning lotion. And she said, I only had makeup that was a little bit darker than my skin. That's my actual hair, though. And so I guess now it's Joy Behar's time in the barrel.
It's as, you know, I can't speak to Joy for Joy Behar, but it's, you know, the governor of Virginia and then the lieutenant governor? I mean, the Attorney General of Virginia. Oh, and by the way, I sent you an email the other day when we were talking about, you were talking about it on the program, querying whether somewhere down the line of this statewide administration for Virginia, if there wasn't a Republican in the line of succession, and lo and behold, there is, the Speaker of the House of Delegates.
Right, and Virginia has a majority in the House,
yeah,
because of a name drawn from a bowl.
Yeah,
no democracy or anything like that to get in the way, none.
So, worst case scenario, the governor resigns, the lieutenant governor apparently has done blackface, so he that
no the attorney general no no no. No, the governor did blackface. The governor did blackface. The lieutenant governor is accused of being a wildly sexual, dangerous black predator man. You know, you got to stay within the stereotypes. But the attorney general, who's third in line, preemptively admitted he had done blackface, and yeah. the majority leader of the Republican Virginia Senate. Got outed because he hadn't done blackface, but was the managing editor of the bomb 1968 VMI yearbook that included more racism than a minstrel show.
Jesus.
Including, again, references to a fellow classmate from Thailand as a chink and a Jap, and a reference to a Jewish classmate as the barracks Jew who had his fingers in all the Corps' the Corps of Cadets' finances.
This crew is not what you would call best and brightest.
No.
A Halberstam, David Halberstam book title. Jesus.
And this is the public stuff. The private stuff would probably make you rich. Now, meanwhile, just because you appreciate that, or well, stuff like this, I've had a couple of different emails over the course of the evening. And by the way, we still got that $55 to go to meet Robert's challenge. So
yeah.
A little bit of time left in the program. I've had a couple of emails referencing a headline because somebody couldn't fucking resist. But there's a deadly serious story underneath it. And the headline reads, Bezos exposes Pecker.
That would be David Pecker.
Yes, of the National Enquirer. And I think maybe some of us were lured into a false sense of security thinking that somehow because he had agreed to cooperate with Mueller's investigation, that maybe David Pecker, in at least an effort to save his own skin, was going to step back from some of the sleazier aspects of what the National Enquirer does. But then you have to calculate that he also, having cooperated and knowing that Julius Geiser knows he cooperated, has to find some way to signal that he's still on the team. And so what the National Enquirer did was threaten blackmail. It was blackmail.
Yeah.
They blackmailed Jeff Bezos, and now Bezos is in the process of a divorce. And he's probably going to, because Bezos got, there's no, you know, for all have sinned and come short of the glory of God, again, Romans 3:23. Bezos decided to do what we call here in Appalachia. He decided to go a-romping. And that means he had extramarital sex. Now, his wife has been with him since before the rise of Amazon. She was with him when he wasn't anything near to what he is now. Okay?
Yeah, selling books out of a garage, as I recall.
I think that's part of the story, yeah. And so she's going to be entitled to probably half of everything. Everything.
And that's a big... everything.
That's a, there's a lot of every in that everything. But now Jeff Bezos has come forward. And over on Twitter, he said, I've written a post about developments with the National Enquirer and its parent company, AMI. You can find it here. And it's called No Thank You, Mr. Pecker. And it was dated today. And he said, something unusual happened to me yesterday. Actually, for me, it wasn't just unusual. It was a first. I was made an offer I couldn't refuse, or at least that's what the top people at the National Enquirer thought. I'm glad they thought that, because it emboldened them to put it all in writing. Rather than capitulate to extortion and blackmail, I've decided to publish exactly what they sent me, despite the personal cost and embarrassment they threaten. AMI, the owner of National Enquirer, led by David Pecker, recently entered into an immunity deal with the Department of Justice related to their role in the so-called catch-and-kill process on behalf of President Trump and his election campaign. Mr. Pecker and his company have also been investigated for various actions they've taken on behalf of the Saudi government. And sometimes Mr. Pecker mixes it all together. And he quotes him a description. But the bottom line is, he says, I didn't know much about most of that a few weeks ago when intimate text messages from me were published in the National Enquirer. I engaged investigators to learn how those texts were obtained and to determine the motives for the many unusual actions taken by the Enquirer, and it turns out there are now several independent investigations looking into this matter. He talks about who he retained. He said, here's a piece of context. My ownership of the Washington Post is a complexifier for me. It's unavoidable that certain powerful people who experience Washington Post news coverage will wrongly conclude that I am their enemy. But he said, he said several days ago, an AMI leader advised us that Mr. Pecker is apoplectic about our investigation. For reasons still to be better understood, the Saudi angle seems to hit a particularly sensitive nerve. By the way, it apparently has come out that as recently as a year ago, the noble, majestic, serene, high graciousness Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman said that he would use a bullet on Jamal Khashoggi.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah. Jeez. Yeah, what a dirtbag.
Well,
the bottom line is he says he was shaken down by David Pecker and has done what some and has published his account of the exchange. But it seems to me that the argument is that this was probably done because Julius Geezer has thrown hissy over hissy over after hissy after hissy after hissy over Jeff Bezos, Amazon, how Amazon ships things, and coverage in the Washington Post, because Jeff Bezos has enough money that he could buy Donald Trump for what he thinks he's worth, sell him for what he's actually worth, and never count the loss.
And did Trump, we know that Trump watched the Super Bowl the other day. In the fourth quarter, late in the game, there was a Washington Post commercial, not a local spot, but national. So we know Trump saw it. In injecting itself into his game with his boy, Tom Brady. What the hell is this country coming to? This ain't American greatness. And it was a pretty good spot. Tom Hanks narrated, and you know the slug line was, democracy dies in darkness is the Post's motto, for lack of a slogan. Tagline, whatever, in today's world. It troubles me, some of the people that they have writing opinions, op-ed sort of things, from the other side. It's like, I'm all for balance, but I don't like apologists or explainers or
well, what
enablers.
What gets particularly sleazy here, it's not we're going to publish some photos. It's we're going to publish some photos if you don't do what we tell you to.
Yeah, well, that's extortion, you know.
And they put it in writing. Bezos writes, in the AMI letters I'm making public, you will see the precise details of their extortionate proposal. They will publish the personal photos unless Gavin DeBecker and I make the specific false public statement to the press that we, quote, have no knowledge or basis for suggesting that AMI's coverage was politically motivated or influenced by political forces. They got that in writing.
Yeah. See, and that's irretrievably stupid. You never put things like that in writing.
And I mean, see, he's got Pecker has his dick in a ringer.
Wait a minute. Give yourself a cowbell, Bob.
Thank you.
That's the greatest headline since, was it the New York Post or the New York News some years ago? Head found in topless bar. Headless body found in topless bar. One of the great headlines.
But this has Mueller ramifications, I think.
Well,
because Pecker may think that this falls within the ambit of his immunity agreement with Mueller, but I don't think it does. And in point of fact, it shows him doing the dirty hatchet work for Donald Trump that he has a long and sordid history of doing.
And may I interject, speaking of long, sordid histories, if you have Amazon Video, if you're a Prime, Amazon Prime subscriber, you can see a documentary from a couple of years ago. I believe Rick Burns, Ken Burns' brother, did it. Called Inquiring Minds, and it details a history of the National Enquirer, and it is a colorful, even sordid history.
Well, from time to time, people have taken them to court and won.
Oh, yeah. Carol Burnett,
Mary Tyler
Carson,
Moore?
Johnny Carson, I think, beat him.
Didn't Mary Tyler Moore also, too?
Yeah, I believe so. But that's the modern, so-called modern National Enquirer. And this documentary really details it. The early days of it, are shrouded in possible criminality, foreign possible criminality, and in the day, I remember distinctly in the early 1960s when it was still a black and white tabloid format, the guy next door, an insurance agent, used to subscribe to it or pick it up at the grocery store, and you'd see old copies of the National Enquirer sitting around, you know, on the end table in the living room. And some of the most gruesome, horrible, lurid, cheesy, nasty, creepy stories, you know, and it was not, you know, funny, innocent stuff like I was Bigfoot's love slave, although there was some of that. This was,
well, that was gory. The good stuff, and that was usually saved for the Weekly World News.
Yeah, but this was back in the 60s and early 70s when the Enquirer was black and white, along the lines and format of Weekly World News.
Please, you have to satisfy my curiosity, yeah. And I'm going to be heartbroken if you tell me no. Please tell me Aunt Effie read the Enquirer religiously and believed every word.
I don't believe Effie did, but Emma did. I know that she...
Good.
She used to... And it only lasted a couple of years. It was a national magazine called... what was it? It was the one that tried to get Liberace. Come on, Scott. You remember this. It was a national magazine... Oh, man, I am spacing it. I don't know why. Confidential. Look up Confidential on your Google machine. Confidential magazine. And I believe there was a documentary that I saw either on YouTube, Netflix, or Amazon about Confidential magazine. I'm almost
published from December 1952 to August 1953, then bimonthly until it ceased publication in 1978.
Yeah, but its heyday was in the mid to late 50s, and you couldn't swing a gavel without hitting someone who was getting sued or who was suing Confidential magazine. But yeah, I know she used to read the movie magazines like Modern Screen and stuff like that. Oh yeah, she was a hoot. But Effie was more prim and proper. Her only real vice, if you want to call it that, was Ham's beer, watching the wrestling, screaming at the TV. But Emma was a wild child. I mean, did I send you those pictures of her from?
I don't think
when
so.
She was a young woman.
No, I don't think so.
Oh, she was a looker.
Back, as the saying goes, back before electricity.
No, wait a minute. She was born in 1880, okay? So she would have been like 10 years old and in...
she would have been a 20-year-old in at the turn of the century.
Yeah. And who was it? You and Tracy were talking about numbers running. She was busted, Aunt Emma was busted... She was manager of an apartment house. I could take it to you today in Alexandria, North Patrick Street. There was about 8 or 10 units in the apartment house, 2 stories, maybe 3. And she was the resident manager, and she decided to run numbers.
It's probably a million-dollar condominium now.
On whose behalf, I don't know. But she had to be in it. She got busted. She did a little time in jail for it. Unless she did initially, I think they ultimately got her off. She paid a fine or something. They worked out a deal with a lawyer. But yeah, she was and that's why my parents didn't. When she hooked up with a house painter, and he married her and took her for everything she had. my parents decided, well, you know, maybe at this point in life, she's being a really bad influence. Well, the damage was done. I already became a free thinker, a free spirit. She was a lot like Auntie Mame in that regard. The Rosalind Russell Auntie Mame.
By the way, we will have to have a review of Hello, Dolly from Tracy.
Tracy, yeah. It was down here a couple of weeks ago, I hear it's pretty good. Well, how can you screw up Hello, Dolly? Come
but on. I trust, as Irish Day was just asking, I trust Aunt Emma didn't think.
She didn't think? No, I wouldn't think so. She was pretty bright. She would come up with a story. What's the deal here, Kitty? Are you not feeling well tonight, or are you just frustrated at the state of things?
Chirps probably wants your attention. And yeah. Frankly, we got to get out of here because we've reached the end of things.
Okay, well, hopefully I have brought hope where hope is needed and humor where it's needed, and insert another nickel and see what else comes out. I don't know.
Scott, have yourself a good evening, my friend.
Okay, Bob. See you.
Later now. Bye. All right. So we still have $55 to finish Robert's challenge, and that'll do considerable. That'll be a considerable help if we could do that. Thanks to all of you who have kicked in this evening. Thanks to everybody, our subscribers, and everybody who kicks in during the course of every given month to keep this program on the air. Thank you so much. Wish there was some other way to do this, but I don't know it if there is. Thank you to all of you who share your precious finite time engaged in this little ongoing conversation. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Without whom we would not have known that people of prayer completed the abolition of civil rights. Thank you, Gene. Thank you to Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thank you very kindly to John Fox in Australia, not bending bananas. Thank you very kindly as well to Ben Birch, whiterosesociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.